It's time for the all-new Gervie's Law, cross-examining the ages, with your host, Alan Gervie, and introducing your co-host, Michelle Lobato. Alan is the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervie & Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm which has represented injured workers for over 40 years. And now, here's your host, Alan Gervie.
I am Alan Gervie, and I'm adjusting my mic here. And this is Gervie's Law. Hi, Michelle.
Hi there.
It's Michelle Lobato.
Happy to be here.
You're nodding and we're on radio.
Yeah.
That's cool. I love it. So do I sound different?
A little congested.
I got this head cold. I don't know. I'm in my head case, but I have a head cold. And I'm telling you, when I first started doing radio, like 12 years, this show has been on for 13 years. And the first thing, the person who taught me, I think it was Debbie actually, she said, eat the microphone. So here I am. I've been eating the microphone ever since, and I'm really feeling badly about the person who's coming
in. I was just about to say, I hope they disinfect it really well.
Well, back in the COVID days, you know, those days, you weren't with me. We had Robert Kennedy Jr. on and Carrie Casey.
Damn, that must have been a cool interview.
Yeah. But anyway, why did I just say that? Well, we'll find out. Anyway, we used to disinfect everything. We had masks on. We'd be eating microphones.
Yeah, I'm sure he was big on that.
He was big on it. Yeah. Good one. Wow. You're on top of things. You are sharp today. So did you watch the Academy Awards?
No, but I did.
Oh, what a shock.
Are
Michelle Lobato did not. You don't even know what they are. The Oscars.
I watched parts of the Oscars. Mainly,
no,
I was looking
didn't.
To see what they were wearing.
Absolutely.
But I was very disappointed that Timothy Chalamet did not win.
You like
an
him?
Oscar. I love
you?
Him. Yeah. I think he's the Johnny Depp of our generation.
But you've never seen a movie he's in. I bet.
No, but I did see Josh Safdie at Sunset Bar. Celebrity sighting.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, for those of you who don't know, you know, it's okay for me to say, I'm not making fun of anything. You're just from a different generation.
Yes.
The movie thing is not your thing.
I mean, I love movies.
Fashion is, but you don't know movies. Like if I said something like Wall Street. Have you seen Wall Street?
I have not seen Wall Street.
Have you heard of it?
I have.
Yeah, because it's in New York. You're going to New York. You know, I know you go for a little fashion trip. How about Platoon? How was that movie?
I have not seen Platoon.
Born on the 4th of July?
No.
No. Have you heard of it?
No.
Oh. How about talk radio? You do talk radio now.
I do talk radio.
You should see it. Actually, the guy in talk radio kind of looks like me a little bit.
Does he? Okay.
Well, people have said that.
How many people?
Three.
Okay.
Network. I don't know about network, but, you know, Art says network, but I don't think you're in line with what I'm doing here. As a lawyer, I'm setting things up.
Laying a foundation.
The Doors?
No.
No. Do you know who was the featured guy in The Doors?
No.
Do you know what it was about?
No.
All right. Well, you've got a little bit to learn.
Okay.
How about Any Given Sunday?
No.
Okay. Midnight Express.
I think we get the point.
Okay. I love it. So, yeah, we're going to introduce our guests. We're excited today. We have with us an actor, a filmmaker, television host, a storyteller. Do you know who it is?
Yes. An interesting person. Sean Stone. Welcome to the show.
Wow.
I feel like I'm supposed to be hiding behind the curtain here.
Yeah, that's what it's like. You're hiding behind the curtain, but you've hid behind curtains before. You're no stranger to controversy. So, you know, hey, what's the big deal? But I love it how you just put it out there. You don't hide anything. But what I like even more, and I got to tell you, I am so jealous. And you can make me feel not jealous and tell me it's not this way. But I saw an interview with you and your father, Oliver Stone. And the two of you just seemed to get along really well. And I don't know if it was just because you were being interviewed, but I have a son. My son is 12 years old, 13 actually. I'm making him younger than he is. And I would do anything to have that kind of relationship, at least what it appeared to be with your father.
Wow.
And I know it can't be easy. I mean, your father's done. And by the way, Michelle, I was talking about Oliver Stone movies.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, amazing.
I'm sure your father's done amazing work.
Isn't that great when you hear someone who doesn't know your father's work, so you can just say, hey, it's all about me?
Just to give you context, Sean, I'm 25.
No, for sure. I mean, it's generational, right? I mean, I grew up in, you know, going to the movies every weekend, and it was such an exciting time to be alive, as you know, like the 80s into the 90s with the original franchises, you know, like the Back to the Futures and the Ninja Turtles and all these things. It was a lot of fun, you know, and you'd have excitement around what's coming out. I can't wait for that movie to come out. I don't think anyone has that feeling anymore, or even if a movie comes out, it's like, oh, it's out. Oh, where is it streaming? Is it on Netflix?
You know, exactly.
Like, there's not that cultural phenomenon around film that there was for so many years.
And was that a way of life for you? I mean, obviously it's a little different. I feel the same way when you talk about movies and, you know, all the franchises and everything, but I didn't have a very well-known father as a director, a filmmaker. So it must have been different for you, but you obviously fell in love with movie making.
I don't know if I fell in love with movie making. I mean, I got to see how hard it is. You know, I got to see the actual work that goes into it. And so I like the camaraderie of it. I love the entrepreneurial spirit of putting something together and bringing a whole host of energy to, you know, collaborators to create a vision. And so it's different. You know, it's on one level, I think when you work on a film, it's like by the end of it, you almost like hate it and don't want to see it again.
Right, right.
Or just like sick of it. You know? Like,
especially when you're talking about documentaries, so, I think.
Well, no, I think it's just, you just feel like, so you've seen it over and over when you're cutting, you know, like if you're directing and you're cutting and you're, you know, dealing with just every aspect of the process, it's difficult. So it's nice to be able to just go to a movie and enjoy someone else's hard work.
You know, it's the same thing for a trial, Lauren. I'm just thinking as I'm listening to you, how many cases I've prepared for trial, and you do so much work, and, you know, it's a little bit different than making a film, but still you're telling a story, you're trying to convince people, whether it's a jury or a judge of these things, and by the end, you almost feel like, I don't want to do this. Like, you know, it's trial time. I've done all the preparation. Yeah. It's too much. It sounds like you're experiencing the same thing.
Kind of, yeah. I'm sure after the case is done, you're like, I'm like just putting that behind me and moving on. But there was a very famous trial in JFK, right? That was a epic hour. I think it was almost an hour of film time of Kevin Costner's character presenting the case for why Oswald did not act alone, and there were CIA elements involved in the conspiracy. So, you know, that was a pretty convincing, I think, thesis.
You know, I didn't mention JFK, and I could have, but it was before Michelle was born, at least the film we're talking about. And
I think all the films you mentioned were before she was born. She was born after millennium.
So. Yes.
That's very true. You're making points with her here. But it's interesting that you say, because I, you know, will age myself here, because, you know, it's funny. Just quick story. I was a transfer student at Brown University. I went to Brown, and I was working. I worked in the I delivered paper to all the student offices, and I went into one, was my second day there, and I was delivering reams of paper on a little hand truck, and the guy came to the front desk and said, okay, put him over there. And I start talking to him, and he was like a super nice guy. And I'm like, wow, I really like it here. And I'm thinking, you know, he said, oh, I'm in Phi Psi. He said, oh, I'm living in the building of Phi Psi. I was too much of a loser to be in Phi Psi. But I said, okay, yeah, maybe we can hang out. So I walked away, and I went back into the truck with this big Rhode Island guy who was delivering. He was a real paper guy who I was just helping him. And I said, yeah, I'm going to hang out with that guy. We're going to go to Phi Psi, going to have a drink. He said, do you know who that is? I said, no. He said, that's John Kennedy Jr. I said, whoops. Oh, cool. And then the next time I was delivering paper to him, I was like so intimidated. I was like, he said, oh, are we going to hang out? And I'm like, yeah, whatever you want. But
it's good to know he's just as cool as love stories portraying him to be.
Oh, JFK Jr. was very cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I couldn't believe it. And, you know, we've had a chance. We're going to talk about Robert Kennedy Jr. as well. And he's been on our show a couple of times. And one of the things that I know that you know about him, Sean, is that he's just another guy. I mean, he has no airs about him. He's really humble. Mm. He's focused on the issues. He's focused. You know, when he was on a show, he talked about Monsanto, and we've talked to him about COVID and stuff. But he really doesn't get caught up in so much of the drama that, I don't know, that we see in this world today. Would you share that opinion? Or I know that, you know, you've spent time with him and you know him.
Yeah, well, a little bit. I mean, he knows a lot of people, right? I think he's met almost half the country. I mean, he ran for president, right? He's met a lot of people along the way, a lot of shaking hands. But what's great about Bobby Jr., I think, is that he's someone that can listen. Both times that we had dinner-like conversations, the first time was right after the Monsanto case. And he was, you know, basically my father and I were discussing with him about the Russiagate, and just I was kind of laying out like why the Russiagate story was fiction, you know, the idea of Trump being a Russian asset. And right. He hadn't really heard that at the time. He was kind of bought into the Democrat line that, you know, Trump was Russian. And so he actually started to reassess based on our conversation. And he talked about that publicly, that it helped him to kind of shift his perspective and understand the situation. And obviously more and more is coming out of late, as I think we'll see here in the future. But basically Bobby is someone that can have a conversation with, and he'll listen to your points. And if you give him a good argument, you know, he will consider it.
Were you surprised when you had that dinner and he was listening to you and he obviously was opening up his eyes and saying, oh, I want to hear that? Were you surprised that he was so open to it versus thinking that he was going to tell you?
No, because at that point he'd already, I mean, this is pre-COVID, so we hadn't gotten into the COVID conspiracies yet. But I mean, at that point he'd already gone down a lot of the rabbit holes of the conspiracy around the assassination of his uncle as well as his father. So he understood the nature of conspiracy. Unless you understand how conspiracies work, you know, you kind of walk through life with this very naive impression that things happen the way that you're told, you know, by a spokesperson or by whatever your favorite government representative is. And when you understand how conspiracies actually like work in the case of intelligence operations, counterintelligence operations, things like this, that's why he got it. But what was cool was the second time when we had dinner right before he joined Trump's campaign, essentially. He didn't join Trump's campaign, but he basically dropped out, right, and said,
right.
You know,
he was supporting.
I'm throwing my hat in for Trump. Right before that, we were discussing again, and he was like, what do you think about Trump? And I'm like, I think he's our best option right now. And we were like discussing basically, you know, the pros and cons. And I didn't know that he was secretly meeting with him. But he essentially was just trying to like gauge some perspectives before making his decision. And so I think that was interesting to be part of that conversation, not knowing that, you know, basically like a week or so later, he'd be basically saying, I'm dropping out in favor of Trump.
Well, maybe you were the impetus for that, that he talked to you and he said, hey, I see a future here with Trump. Maybe the guy will be president. And it's all because of Sean Stone.
I wish I could say it's all because of me, but certainly I think he was willing to listen, which is always a good sign.
And we're going to talk about RFK Legacy, the film streaming on Angel platform, the Angel Guild platform. But before we do, you mentioned RFK Jr., Bobby Jr., and his father and the relationship. I opened up by talking about your relationship with your father.
Yeah.
And I was saying that I think it's kind of a dream maybe of a father to be able to have these kind of really comfortable relationships. Is that the way you feel, you know, with your dad? And do you see any commonalities with Bobby? And obviously, you know, his father was assassinated before he really had a chance to kind of bond. But how do you see that?
Well, no, they bonded, but it wasn't like they got to evolve the bond,
right?
You know, because it changes as we go through adolescence and, you know, we go on our own misadventures and whatever, you know, the point is that it would be interesting as you see in the story of the RFK Legacy, you see how, Bobby Jr., you know, gets into drugs and, you know, goes off, you know, basically tries to follow his father's footsteps, but is really lost for a few years, you know, and it would have been interesting to know how his dad would have reacted. His
right.
mom, you know, obviously was, you know, really, I'm sure, shocked and dismayed, but it would have been interesting to know how his father would have, you know, maybe given him that, like, tough love that he needed.
Did you identify with that, with your father at all?
Tough love, sure, but in different ways. So, I mean, so as far as the bond, I mean, you know, again, we talk in the story about the bond between, again, it's a big family. I mean, it's a lot of brothers and sisters. I don't know, what is it, like 7, 8, 9?
Yeah.
I mean, they're Catholic, right? So there's,
right.
there's a lot of kids. And, you know, and Bobby's a namesake. He's Junior. And so, you know, it's a special bond he must have had with his father. And you see some of the footage in the film about them going on trips, you know, going on, you know, on the river, rafting, that kind of stuff. And you know, that's also in my case, you know, how I would bond with my dad would be on trips mostly, because my dad wasn't really the most, you know, how do you say, he did not love being a dad to, he was not a good kid's dad. You know, he did not like, you know, playing, you know, with kids, you know, sports, like with little kids,
yeah.
you know, like doing, you know, doing things that were more like watching a Disney movie, that kind of thing. It was like pulling teeth to get him to watch something like that. So with him, it was more about like, let's travel the world and go to India and Nepal and Tibet and Vietnam and kind of, you know, get that, his perspective on history and his perspective on the Vietnam War. Obviously, you know, he'd you know, been there as a soldier. And so going with him, you know, to see the tunnels of Cu Chi and, you know, how, you know, just seeing some of his, like his memories and what, you know, what was obviously still some level traumatizing him. But, you know, it was wonderful to be able to like travel there with him and see his appreciation for the land and the people.
Did you ever have
the war.
Political differences? You know, when you talk about RFK, Robert Kennedy, and then Bobby mm-hmm. Jr., obviously, he's not alive today. Do you have any opinions? And I think the film is great at addressing this, but his perspectives now, Bobby, very different from what you might imagine RFK thought about certain issues.
I don't know. I think, you know, the world has changed so much. I mean, this is what people, at one level, the fight, you know, people say like, oh, we're so divided. I go back to the 60s and 70s. I mean, this country was very divided. I mean, under, you know, at the time of 68, when Bobby was senior, RFK Sr. was running, you had, you know, you're talking about Black Lives Matter. You had the Black Panthers and all these black power movements out here that were,
right.
you know, actively organizing and, you know, sometimes doing criminal activity like armed robberies and things like this. I mean, you had the Minutemen, what was it, the Weathermen sending bombs to the, you
right.
know, to the post office and other buildings and trying to blow up the Pentagon. I mean, this is not new. It's just people don't know history. So they think it's always, oh, this is a new crisis. It's like, no, we go through crises. It's consistent. It's a consistent story in history. And, in RFK's era, you know, he was a World War II era, you know, and the mindset of a World War II generation, man, they were tough. They had a tough mindset. They, I think they'd think we're all very spoiled, you know, but it's, you know, it's not a bad thing to be a little spoiled by the benefits of what, you know, of technology, right. And productivity and what's created, the ease of our society. We talk about this chaos. I'm like, you know, World War II, maybe 60 to 100 million people died. Do you understand,
yeah.
like, real chaos, what that looks like when entire, you know, all the entire planet is engaged in a conflict and, you know, you're seeing entire, you know, cities and civilizations decimated and wiped out. I mean, that's conflict. What's happening, you know, what happens here is just, like, it's not petty, but it's just small in comparison.
Yeah,
so I think people have to have like a little bit of a reassessment of their, you know, they just dramatize. People like to dramatize so much. You know?
Also, I don't think
everyone,
people.
You know, it can't belittle someone's drama, but you have to contextualize a little bit, you know.
Well, I don't think people really understand the history. A lot of people speak out with really, you know, your point about historical references. You know, we're not the first society right now to go through war or to have divisions and conflict. And if you didn't live through it 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years ago, you don't have the frame of reference, but it doesn't mean that it didn't exist and it wasn't dramatic at the time. I want to talk quickly about directing, because you directed RFK Legacy. What was that like? And, you know, obviously working with your father, which you've done on some occasions, and others you've worked on your own. What was it like with the RFK Legacy project?
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, it's every project, as you say, as you said, is different in terms of how it comes together. The first time I directed my dad was on his film Alexander, where I was shooting the behind-the-scenes documentaries, you know, so I got a chance to really shadow him and spend almost every day with him for, like, you know, three and a half months. And that became my first documentaries. And then, you know, I got to direct him briefly on Greystone Park, which was my first feature, where I played myself in the film, he played himself. And so, you know, with him, I generally let him, you know, I let him do his thing.
for good reason.
You know, I might come in, you know, like on RFK Legacy, I think the only issue was more of timing, you know, having to, like, kind of cut to certain things or just say, hey, there's a time thing, let's get to this point, or let's get to that topic before it's too late, because, you know, RFK Jr. had a certain schedule with his campaign he was running. So we really had a time crunch. But for the most part, my dad has done this so many times. You know, he's interviewed Putin, he's interviewed Castro and Chavez and Lula and all these, you know, presidents and, you know, dictators, whatever you want to call it, you know. But the point is, he's interviewed powerful men. So I think it was really just about giving him certain questions and then letting him get to the meat of what he felt was interesting and letting him, you know, engage with Bobby as a human.
How can people watch RFK Legacy?
Mystery. That's such a mystery nowadays with, you know.
Well, that's why I'm asking. That's what you're here for, Sean. Answer it. You're gonna solve the mystery right here. Everyone listening.
Uh-huh. Great. Now you go to Google and you search RFK Legacy. No, it's basically on Amazon Prime. It's on Angel, you know, Angel Studio has their own streamer. So I don't know if people are subscribing to Angel. Yep. They've got some other great content. They did films like Sound of Freedom and a whole collection, a whole library of content now. So RFK Legacy is there. But you can also go to my website, seanstone.info, and that links to the documentary on RFK. It links to my documentary on the Russiagate conspiracy, my other documentaries, like, you know, I did one with Deepak Chopra. I've done one about the Hollywood, Washington, D.C. kind of nexus of power.
Which has been your favorite producing?
Oh, come on. That's like asking, you know, who's your favorite kid? Well, you don't have kids. You don't. I don't have kids either. But the point is, you know, you don't ask someone who's your favorite child. You got to, you know, when you make a movie or you commit yourself to
gun to your head, what is your answer?
There's no answer, because it's whatever I'm working on. You know.
There's the answer. That's what it is. You know, so. We're going to put some pressure, and there's 3 minutes left. We're going to go through the rapid round. You ready for the rapid round? And I know these questions don't necessarily have a quick answer, but let's see how you fare. So the Academy Awards were on the other night. Javier Bardem said some things that were controversial. Do you believe that the Academy Awards should be used for political purposes?
Look, my dad has used it for political purposes. His first speeches, you know, when he won the Oscar for Midnight Express, he, you know, criticized the war on drugs. When he won for Platoon and Bourne, I can't remember. I think on one or the other, he, you know, basically talked about the wars, you know, and essentially, like, reminding Americans about, you know, he is anti-war, right? And those films were fundamentally anti-war. So I'm not someone that's going to tell you not to utilize the platform to make a point that you feel is valid, and if people disagree, that's their right to disagree. So
you're not against it.
No, how can I be against it? I mean, film is socially, it can be socially challenging. You know, films and stories can question. I just think that people get, you know, my dad made fun of at the WGA. You know, he got the Lifetime Achievement. He said, "You guys are all out here, you know, bashing Trump because that's the easy thing to do." But it's been a consistent series of presidents getting us into endless conflicts and bombings of countries.
Right.
And, you know, you give them passes, but it's just easy to say, you know, Trump's the bad guy.
Put it in context. Here, we only have 2 minutes, 1 minute and a half. Here's the easiest question. Real easy. It's a short answer. You've spent time in Iran years ago, and if people want to Google you and they can find out about it. What is your perspective on the war there?
I'm in favor of the regime change. I'm in favor of us neutering their capacity for conflict with us. I think that Iran, when I was there, I was urging them, you know, you guys need to shift your perspective, and basically it's time to work with Israel and America. And I think the Saudis picked up on that, and they did it, and they've, you know, they're reforming and modernizing and bringing money, and that's why it's UAE is, you know, growing. And I think Iran could be the same if they just got off of this high horse of, you know, hatred of America and Israel. So I'm all in favor of getting rid of that regime and seeing the Persian people back in power and having a country kind of like what they had in the 70s that would be, I think it would blossom. It would be an amazing country.
You said a lot in a little, and we appreciate that. Very well put. Sean Stone, thank you for being with us today. RFK Legacy, everyone check it out. Sean, it's been a pleasure on Gurbi's Law.
Thank you so much.
All right, take care and good luck.
Thank you, Sean.
All right, that's going to do it for another episode of Gurbi's Law. Thanks for listening.